So there's a couple other processes I want to do with you that are going to be very exhilarating. These are the kind of things that are going to stay with you. They will anchor in you in an almost hypnotic way. But before going to those, I'd like to introduce another speaker, somebody who's a dear friend of mine, somebody who has inspired me by his own trek, his own transformation, his own adventure. I'm talking about Pat O'Brien, who is sitting back there with Betsy. Pat has been recording all of this and just doing a wonderful deed by doing that for me. Thank you again, Pat, and for all of us. Pat is a well-known blues musician. He tours Europe quite a bit. He has 5 or 6 CDs. I've lost count, so forgive me if I don't have it. 6, apparently. And I have all of them, and I love them all. When I first met him, it was through a mutual friend. We're all in the mastermind group together. It was Bill Hibbler. And Pat came to me to, first of all, give me a guitar lesson. And there we were doing some swapping, and he wanted some internet advice. And one of the first things he told me when he came to the house, and I was sitting on the front porch, and I'll never forget it because he was red-faced, he was angry at the world, and he said he just wanted to learn how to pay his blankety-blank rent. That's all he wanted to learn. Well, this man has totally transformed himself from the inside out. Not only does he pay the rent now, but do everything else that you can think of. He's come out with 40-some products within a year, I think. It may be more, maybe a little less, but 40-some is pretty staggering. He's gone from zero to being an internet guru in his own right with his own following. When he announced his own seminar a month or so ago, which was just held a couple weeks ago, he sold it out within 6 hours. Pretty impressive. And so I've always marveled at Pat's transformation. The guy soaks up all of this information and he takes action. He's really living and breathing the money like speed mantra that I've given out. But I've also been curious about what was really going on within him, if he can even articulate it himself, that caused this transformation. There's still a whole lot of struggling blues musicians that are out there in Austin. And who are, they could buy internet books, and they may have bought some of our internet books, but they're still struggling. So what kicked in him? What did he read? What did he do? What was the thought process? This is what I've always wanted him to talk about. And I finally got him to agree to do it today for you. So please give a big warm welcome to Pat O'Brien.
Well, thank you, Joe. Well, are you curious? You know, how does a guy making 35, 40 bucks a night playing guitar and honky-tonks, you know, I think my first year in internet marketing was a good, healthy 5 figures. Last year was an alarming 6 figures. This year, we're just going to try to take money off the table. We're not going to worry about money anymore. So, how did I do that? Well, back before I met Joe, I read a book called Atlas Shrugged. Y'all familiar with Ayn Rand's? And before that, I was a hippie. I'm still kind of a hippie, but what I mean by that is I still have conspicuous consumption issues sometimes. It didn't stop me from buying my new car, though. But I read that book, and I realized that everything I thought I knew about money was wrong. Just wrong. You know, if you're trading value for money, it doesn't make you a capitalist pig. You know, it's okay to do that. It's a good thing. And so I asked myself, what else do you think you might be wrong about? Guess what the answer was? Everything. Great. Late 40s. And then I met Joe. He gave me a copy of Spiritual Marketing. I took it on tour with me, and that, of course, changed everything. But another writer I read, does anybody know about Douglas Adams? Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy? I lived there. And there's this one scene in Mostly Harmless, one of his books, where the protagonist is talking to a sage, you know, a guru. And the guru tells him, you can't know what I know because you know what you know. And there's no room for what I know. There's another scene in earlier book where he's learning how to fly. And he discovers that the key to flying is to not know what you're doing. You have no clue. And I'm telling you these things pretty much the way they occurred to me, because they happened randomly. There was no great plan in my life to become a rich internet marketing guru. But there was definitely a plan to stop doing the things that I was doing because they weren't working. Any questions so far? So, our story up till now, you have a guy in his late 40s who realizes that everything he knows is wrong and everything he's doing isn't working. Well, then I went to Joe's seminar. It cost $1,000 to get in, but Joe snuck me in the back door. And I think it was Terry Levine that gave the talk about what's working, what's not working, and that you should do the things that work and stop doing the things that don't work. And I would say that if I have any one trick, any one secret, it would be a brutal application of that theory. If something is not working, it goes. It's been a highly confusing process for Betsy and for a lot of our friends because, you know, once I decided to delete everything that was working, there wasn't anything left. And so who was Pat O'Brien? Who is this guy? In Betsy's case, who is this guy that's living in my house? You know, because he's, you know, I went through some changes very, very quickly because I was trying to find things that would work. As you can tell, I haven't really prepared anything. Yeah. But, you know, I'm sitting here like in real time while I'm looking at you going, now, how did this all happen? You know, basically it started out by just, I mean, that was a really big thing. Nothing I'm doing is working, and I don't know anything. So, you know, Joe and I are in a mastermind group together along with Craig, and Joe brings in books. Just about every mastermind meeting, Joe will walk in with 7 or 8 copies of these books, and I started reading those. And there was some stuff in those that worked. What was the book about winners do this, losers do that? Is it Steve Seibold's book?
The book is by Steve Seibold, S-I-E-B-O-L-D. I believe the title is 101 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class. I absolutely love the book. I think it's absolutely genius. What's in there is true wisdom. It is not a book that you read like a novel. You have to read it one page a day or maybe a week and go chew on it, digest it, absorb it. I actually went through an entire 6-month teleseminar series with Steve Seibold and a few other people where all we did was analyze that book for 6 months. It was a life-changing book, a life-changing experience, and I had forgotten that I had given it to the mastermind group. Yes.
I've got a whole bookshelf in my office of books that Joe's given me. A lot of them say, by Joe Vitale. But that was like phase two. It's like, okay, now I've got this big empty space in my head. I've taken out all the stuff that doesn't work. I had to delete some people. You know, a lot of musicians. I call it the beautiful loser syndrome. You know, it's like, it is so noble to be broke and drunk and evicted and not have gas to get to the gig and have your bar tab exceed what you made from the gig. You know, so it's like I had to evict from my life a lot of my peer group. You know, I needed a new peer group. Mastermind's been very good for that. It also helps to surround yourself with inspiring people. Again, the mastermind's been good for that. Joe walks in and starts talking about what he did that week. And you realize a man's walking in on 2 legs just like I did. You know, so, you know, you realize he's human. You know, he has gifts, graces, talents that are unique to him. But what he's doing is utilizing his gifts, his graces, his talents in a way that I didn't realize was possible. And now everybody in our mastermind group is just, whoop. I think it's the mutual inspiration. Would you like to know how I built my internet business? Should I tell the secret? Was that hypnotic? Well, like Bob Dylan said, when you've got nothing, you've got nothing to lose. I had no reputation. I had no self-esteem. Nothing to lose. I couldn't lose my career because I didn't have one. You know, playing guitar in bars, that's not a career. That's an excuse to get drunk. So, working with Joe, he gave me Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. And I read it, then I read it again. And then I said, this book is whack. It's got some great information in it, but it was written in the 30s. It's noisy. It's got, you know, so I went through and I made a workbook. And to make a long story short, that's where my list got started. I now have a nice list. And it all started from making that workbook, putting it online, giving it away, which was Joe's idea. I wanted to sell it. Let's make money. No, let's give it away. I need money. Let's give it away. Okay, so we gave it away. Suddenly I have a list. I'd rather have a list than money. You know, so that's where the list started. At which point, I was an expert on writing ebooks. So I wrote an ebook called Effortless Ebooks, which I then gave away, which built my list. What happened next? We got into the binaural beat stuff early on, did a bunch of meditation-based audio products, which, how to put this? When you go from making, say, $800 a month to having a $50,000 week, maybe it took more than a week, but our last promotion in December, poof, you know, because you end up making friends with people and those friends tell their friends, and next thing you know, your friends with huge lists are telling their friends. And I'm going to stop right there because I feel like I'm getting kind of... Any questions? Can you all help me straighten this out?
There was something you said probably about a year ago or so about your understanding of reframing. Remember that? Blues musician to... I think that would be really useful for people that have skills that perhaps they could reframe them.
Yeah, I was framing things through the eyes of a blues guitar player. That's a very small frame. So what I did was I just said, whoa, that's not working. And then I did a kind of an asset inventory. What assets do I have? Well, I have the ability to write music and record it. I can write. And then it's more like unframing than reframing because we take all the frames off, all the limitations off, and look at what in an infinite universe, kind of like the one we live in, could you do with this list of assets? You know, that's how it's so easy to create products, you know, because without any frames, you hear about a problem. And you go, okay, with my list of assets, what solution can I have for that problem? And then I write an ebook about it, or talk about it, or go interview somebody about it. Make a video about it and sell it to people. Did that go by too fast? Did you understand what I meant about reframing and unframing? I'm up here thinking this is the least organized, least articulate thing I've ever done in my life. And you're going to have to, yeah.
It sounds like you went from reading and eliminating, and then really reading and beginning to understand from within strengths or whatever. But then you just started cranking out products. Was it reading books on how to do that? Did you just get over the how to and just start doing it?
Well, it looked fast from the outside, but on the inside it was baby steps, to be honest. I mean, who the hell am I to write an e-book? You know, that's what people like Joe Vitale do. I did it anyway. Because how many of you are on my list already? Did you read the posting I did about your comfort zone? Yeah, it's the most dangerous place in the world. If you're in your comfort zone, you're in the wrong place. And, well, but basically I'm chicken shit. I did it a little bit, you know. Oh, I wrote an e-book, but nothing bad happened, right? Well, how about that? So I'll write an e-book about doing e-books. Ooh, got away with that one. You know, then, well, I'll do these audios about binaural beats, which I just learned about 2 weeks ago. But I did a bunch of research and I found a friend that knew something about them, and I can always write music. And it's like, I'll put them out there. Nothing bad happened. As a matter of fact, we sold a whole bunch of them. And it's just been little plateaus, little plateaus. And like I say on my blog, the things I'm scared of are a lot more interesting now than the things I used to be scared of. I mean, I used to be scared of really mundane stuff. Well, I just kind of basically started a video production company and started a business that's going to be putting on a series of seminars. We're going to do 4 this year. And we're videoing the seminars. And we have another business that teaches people how to do what I do. But, you know, Joe says if it scares you, do it. It doesn't mean that you're not going to be scared. You know, it's like, I can assure you. For some reason, it was easier for me to talk at my own seminar because everybody there knew me. They were all on my list. But it scares me to stand in front of you right now, you know. Most of you have no clue who I am. Anyway, you ask about creating products. Every problem is a product. And once I learned to start framing it that way, and I hang out like on newbie forums, and then I've got my own forums. I've got mentoring clients, and I listen. You know, what problem are they having? That's my next ebook or my next interview. Because you know there's a demand for it. Yo.
Okay, question. How did you start from when you wrote something like that? You wrote a synopsis of Thinking Grow Rich in a Workbook, right? How did you go to give that away when there's no traffic to your site? What was the link between, you know, putting something out there for free and getting a lot of people to actually know that it's out there for free?
Well, big link is right here. You know, Joe told his list. But, again, Joe kind of directed me. He's the one that handed me the book. It was my idea to do the workbook. But when I came back and said, what do we do now? I want to sell this. And he says, no, let's give it away. He had his list. So my list began from his list. But Think and Grow Rich is a really hot search term. And word got out. And other people, other marketers that use the concepts from that book found out about it. It's been the my bonus for some book giveaways, too. Some book, like the Mark Joyner promotion. I didn't use it on this one, but that's a great way to get traffic. Yeah, we could just hijack this thing and go south on how to drive traffic to your freebie. But it's such an easy sale, you know. What I tell my mentoring clients is find out who is already selling to your customer. Create a freebie. And then just go tell those people, hey, you can make your list very happy by giving them this free article, ebook, interview, whatever it is. And it's an easy sale because the list owner gets to make his subscribers happy. The subscribers get something for free. You get to cream his list. Did that answer the question?
That really is my question, because I'm kind of in that dilemma of looking for a product, not a blues musician, but I know kind of what that residual stuff is that you drag around, and looking for a business in the internet obviously is product driven, and once you have a product, then you kind of have to look around and try to learn or try to find a way to get it on the net. So you were fortunate that Joe was your benefactor. But you had a product. But you still had a viable product.
I actually, have a rebuttal to that. You'd be amazed how many people he does JVs with in the course of a year. And some of them, I mean, he likes to help people. So some of the people he does JVs with, off they go. Some of them go, doing, doing. So I must admit, I owe it all to Joe at that level. But my trick, my secret is, I kept going. You know, thank you for starting my list. Thank you for being my partner. Thank you for being my JV. But if I had just done that one thing and then stopped, the business would have been over, you know. In the internet marketing community, people are beautiful. They'll give you a shot. It has to make sense. You know, if I'd gone to Joe and said, Joe, I have this great freebie about automobiles, automobile mechanics. You know, send your list my ebook on how to tune your Porsche. He might have said, forget it. You know, I like you, but no. But if you come up with a viable product, a viable freebie, again, I've been teaching this for the last year, and it's the same thing with my mentoring clients. Some of them grab what I say, go do it, and now they're marketing to me. You know, I'm watching, you know, they move on, drop out of the program. They've got businesses. And, of course, I subscribe to all of their lists, and, like, they're doing all the promotions. And, you know, hey, Pat, you know, first name. Hey, first name, Pat, you know, check out this new promotion for this new product I just created about such and such. That's the way to go. A lot of my mentoring clients sign on. A week later, I hear from them. A month later, I hear from them. They don't take action. Did you have a question?
I actually just wanted to know now how, where and how does your music fit into your life now that you have sort of gone past the money issues, so to speak. Have you reframed that?
Well, there's two answers to that. First of all, if you go to my blog and look at the videos, I do the soundtracks. I've got a very nice recording studio, and I get to make music. But I actually was talking to Amy about, you know, the fact that I used to be an artist and used to be a musician, and she asked me, you know, was your heart really in it? Is that really where your heart is? And I had to really stop and think about it and realize that I really don't know where my passion is. About music, I was staking it, to be honest. I heard an interview with Yo-Yo Ma where he talks about sitting alone in his apartment with his cello, and these are the moments he lives for musically. You know, himself by himself, with this multi-million dollar cello playing it. I'm like, that man, that is a musician. I go on tour. I come home. The guitars are in their road cases. They go in the corner. And for the last few years, they don't come out until I go on tour again. So I'm developing a curiosity now. Wonder what I'm going to do next. So that's where the music fits in right now, is it's a useful tool. It's a lot of fun. I like to write music. But do I live for it? Does it spin me? Does it light me up like it used to when I was 16? No? Okay, so there's a couple of ways we can go. Do y'all want to talk about products? Do y'all want to talk about changing your mind?
What year was it that you came out with 40 products? And how many of them worked that you would consider to be a success?
I can tell you my definition of success. First of all but one of them were financially profitable. A couple of them, I mean, and they're all still selling, you know, which gives me the freedom to create, you know, like to go into the event promotion business and the video production business. But they were all successes in that they were a step I had to take to get to the next step. And, you know, from inside of me, it's remarkably ballsy to say I'm going to put on a seminar. You know, some people go pay Armin Moran a bunch of money to learn how to put on a seminar. I put on a seminar to learn how to put on a seminar. Was it a success? Well, yeah, it was a great success. on a lot of levels, because we can talk about making products here. The actual people showing up at the event, I made money from that. I audio and video recorded it. I make money from that. And then I'll pull a Joe. I'll write a book about how I did it and make money from that. Those are all products.
What's your thought process when you come out with a product? Are you dropping the eraser on your product? Are you setting an intention? Are you visualizing? Because you seem real shoot from the hip. I got an idea, I'm going to act on it, and then I'm going to move on to the next thing. And you don't really worry that much. No, let me say, I've watched the process intimately. It's exactly that. We're talking, he gets an idea, that's what I'm going to do. And he literally just starts doing it. He says, okay, what do I need to do? You know what would be cool is if that seminar's videotaped. Well, okay, who could we hire? No, you know what? Well, we're going to do other seminars. Why don't I just learn what it means to videotape? And then we need somebody to edit the videos. Well, no, I'll edit he's talking, I'll edit the videos, and then I'll learn what that's about. He didn't know how to do any of that. It was, what do we need? I'll learn how to do it. I'll do it. I'm not kidding you. He does not waste time wondering about the quality. What is somebody going to think about it? He gets an idea, and he lays it out and does it with the materials he has at hand. And that's enough. That's enough. And that's huge. Because I'm going, but look at the quality here. I mean, your video of Austin, Texas, you're driving the car, and you've got the little bitty camera over here, and you're going like this. And the video is like this, and the window is closed, and you can't see some of those buildings, and that's the most popular video he's done on his site. Okay, I'm done.
This is a question for both. Did he do the same when he decided to change his life?
Did you work so quickly? Did it happen just like that when you decided to change your life? When you began reframing, did you just go, oh, I've got to reframe. I've got to think differently and do it. No. It was from the outside watching. It was months of hard thinking, questioning, and trying to get information and process it and figure it out. And it took time.
Any other questions for Betsy? From my perspective, the thing that took the most time was doing the inner work. Just pulling, I mean, it was almost physically pulling out all these horrible beliefs I had about money and spirituality and my own self-worth. And then there's the narcissistic part of being a performer. That is the reason most people are performers. And it's very unhealthy. I mean, if you're living to see your name on the marquee and your picture in the window, you're living a very shallow life. Well, that was me. You know, but once I did the work of pulling all of that out of my head and making room, and then with Joe's help, putting better things in my head,
the overall feeling that I get from you is that I'm wondering if the secret to your success is detachment. And I'm wondering if I'm reading that right or not. Are you coming up with an idea, acting on it, and then just letting it go and just moving on to the next idea? Are you so enthralled in what you're doing that the reason why you're successful is because you're not worried about the outcome? Is that what you do? So there's Pat O'Brien's secret then.
I don't have a question. I just wanted to point out a couple things that I've watched about Pat's process. And since the questions are addressing it, what I really hope you take away from what he's saying is the specific process of first he found a mentor. okay? Someone that he identified with who could give him guidance or at least a role model. It doesn't have to be someone you know in person either, though it certainly does help. But he also, really what he's done is he has solved real problems and is aware that other people have the problems, and therein becomes the product. You really don't want to just create a product and then go try to figure out how to sell it. You really, really, really don't want to do that, because it's a crapshoot as to whether anybody else actually shares your vision of that problem. And so what he's done is very, very elegant and very clear. He just solves the next problem and then packages it and sells it. And he's been himself. He's been totally, you know, candid with his list about the process and built a following by using his talents. He reframed his interest in audio, and just now he's passionate about solving problems and this quest. So he's still doing what he's passionate about, but he's taking it step by step. And so if you want to partner with people, if you want to have a product, just start solving some of your own problems that other people have. Like he says, he doesn't just come out of his own head. He's looking in forums and places like that where other people just like him are hanging out, and he's frankly taken the no fear approach, or at least, you know, do it anyway approach, even if he is afraid, and just goes for it. But if you do that, you can find partners, you can find all the things we're talking about, because it's organic to the market. They're telling you that they want it. It is a real problem, and he's solving it. It's just, I think really one of the things that Pat has shown here is that he just kept it simple. You know, I have a tendency to overcomplicate things. So Pat just keeps it simple, and I think that's a thing that you could take away from that, is had a mentor, started solving problems, and just did it, and kept it simple without overanalyzing it. So that's my takeaway. But definitely have the problem and solve it. Don't come up with a product and hope to sell it somewhere. Start with the problem and solve it.
So my question is, are you looking for problems, and how are you ascertaining them? Is it kind of like if you have a loved one and you want to get a sense of what they might want as a gift, you just hear a normal conversation and something lands what I really want or what I'm really having struggle with is, and that put this in your file and you chew on that for a little bit, and then how is that process of hearing the problems, finding the problems, and then matching your passion or skills or whatever your language would be to solve those problems in a way that you would enjoy?
I'm very selfish. I solved the next problem I need to solve. I needed to learn how to write ebooks, so I wrote one. And, okay, here's how you write it. Here's how you convert it to PDF. Here's how you get it online. Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, and then I wrote, you know, solved the problem for myself and wrote the ebook, Effortless Ebooks. And then the next problem was building a list. Need to do that. So I researched it, and how do you do that? I wrote another ebook about list building. Wrote one about how to do joint ventures, because I had to learn how to do it. So it's, I mean, you just solve the problems in the order they occur. Absolutely. Well, I was a perfect laboratory because I knew nothing. So I'm like, well, what would someone else who knows as little as I do need to know? Which I think gave me a pretty good platform and a pretty good vocabulary, because I could speak as a newbie to a newbie. And it's like, hey, I just learned this thing, and I just learned it, and I started where you were. So initially, now, there came a time when I'd solved all the problems up to that point, and I needed more products. So I would lurk in forums, and eventually started my own forum, just so I could research what problems are people having. And then these days, I'm tending to look at bigger things, like how do you put on a seminar? Because up until then, it was like, what problem can I solve in the next 48 hours? And now I'm looking at bigger chunks of time. And then, you know, how do you do video production for the web? You know, so I had Narissa to draw from, but I still had to learn. You know, what camera do you need? How do you set it up? How do you edit? And these are tending to be much bigger chunks, which are creating many more products. You know, I got 30 hours of video to edit out of the seminar. These are all products.
I would imagine as you grow more and make bigger chunks, you're also creating more problems that you then have to solve.
And, you know, it's kind of neat because, you know, the definition of an expert, right? Somebody who started right before you did. Well, then you turn around and go, I'm the expert to everybody that starts after you.
Pat, you said that you had to get rid of your beliefs. Did you write an e-book on that? Because that's a biggie.
She says I should write an e-book on how I was able to change my, get rid of the bad.
I totally agree with what you just said. One of my favorite examples of changing beliefs is when he was considering getting a new car. He saw that I had gotten a new car. I had taught a class on how to attract a new car. A lot of people were getting new cars. Just listen to the audios on attractanewcar.com. And he came into the mastermind one day, and he was driving a really old, beat-up pickup truck that he looked just right in, and he was at home in, and he liked it because he felt invincible in it. Nobody dared hit it, or if they hit it, who cared? He had this pickup truck, and he, at the mastermind, as I remember it, he started dismissing new cars. He was saying, the new cars they make today are crap. They don't last long. They're not very safe. And he was spouting all these beliefs. And we listened to him for a while, and I know that I, for one, who have some BMWs, was pointing out, no, these cars are built better than ever before. And Narissa was pointing out the cars were being built better before. And he was taking it all in. He wasn't resisting it. The average person in that point would have defended their beliefs. But he was listening to these counter beliefs and saying, well, maybe there's some truth to that. And then he moved to, and it was in the very same meeting, he moved to resisting getting a new car at all to, I don't know what kind of new car I would get. So he was watching. We were watching the walls of the beliefs fall down, moving from I don't want one to, well, I want one, but I don't know what kind of one. And we left them with the thought about, why don't you just go and make a list of all the things you would like to have in a new car? They went online and basically Googled it. And he had typed in the stuff that he was looking for, and he ended up getting a particular vehicle that he was in love with and drove for the longest time. I forget the exact, is it a Scion? It was a Scion, which he said looked like Batman's golf cart. And drove it for the longest time until when he was in Atlanta, it was stolen. And even then, I still marveled at his relaxed, detached approach to it. He would have to say if there were any beliefs that he had to wrestle with at that point. But I saw him go from not wanting a new car to getting a new car to losing a new car and then deciding on he was going to get another new car and then getting the new car, which is parked out there, probably right outside that door. He even upped what he had before by getting one that was a little bit more expensive, a little bit more luxurious. But I saw the man tumble down the beliefs before my eyes. So I would say that I would agree with her that that is something else that you would write about, telling your story, how you did it. And if there's any clues that you can give out, it may just be simply as using the eraser or saying, I love you, but whatever was unique for you. And you don't have to answer that. I'm just saying, I like that book.
That's right.
I have a request for you on that book, that you at least write one of them specifically to men who would not sure they have negative beliefs or want to change them, but should they decide to come conscious and read it, I could give one to my...
Will you tell us what you're clearing right now with that eraser?
Fear of public speaking. You understand about the fear of public speaking, right? It's like more prevalent than the fear of death. I want to try something. Would y'all help me create a product real quick? Okay, everybody, take your clearing instrument, piece of paper. Well, first of all, visualize your life and all the people in it. Just kind of big macro, get up in the air, look down on yourself and your life. Now write down three things that are not working. Could be a person. Could be a career, could be a belief, could be anything. Just kind of look up when you're through. Okay. Just about everybody's got it. now. Raise your hand if you can immediately delete those things from your life. Did everybody understand? If these things that are not working, if you can take them out of your life right now, raise your hand. That's not very many hands. You can. What was it, 2, 3 hands? Okay, you've identified that it's not working. So who wants to tell me why they want to remain attached to something that's not working? Still no hands.
My number one item is not making enough money. So if I throw it out, does that mean that I'm making enough money? Or does that leave the opportunity open to make enough money?
What do you think?
This concludes Disc 5. Now please insert Disc 6.